This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Roseau County Historical Society. For the past 2 weeks, I read from a publication by Grace Landine about three Chippewa families from Warroad and their contributions to the local culture. I read first about Kokegisik. Today, I'll read about the Lightning family from that same document. The information came from interviews of Margaret Lightning Oss with recollections from her parents, which she interpreted, as well as recordings of information and dates personally recorded by her. An interview in 1971 with Tom Lightning was also used. The families that lived at Warroad before the coming of the white man and still make Warroad their home includes the names of Kokegisik, Lightning, and Thunder. The Lightning family still continues some of the early craft work of basket weaving, bead, and leather work. This family was willing to supply the necessary information, so this family history is mainly from primary sources. Honest John Lightning and Nay May Puck made their first trip to Roseau for marketing around 1880. They had heard they could find a fur buyer and store in Roseau where they could trade. These two men were brothers of Kokegisik. Tom Lightning was the son of Honest John. It is his story that will be recorded here. Tom Lightning was born on October 10, 1875. His wife was born on October 14, 1881. Both are at present living in the rest home at Warroad. This was written in 1972. There were three children born to this marriage, Hans, Margaret, and John. Hans was killed early in his adult life and left five children. Margaret, who has one son, still resides in Warroad and continues the early Indian craft work. John has retired from the United States Navy after 29 years of service and again makes Warroad his home. He has two children. Tom Lightning's parents were Honest John Lightning, Magi Gabo, and his wife, Ogi Kwe Kamiguk. When Tom was a young boy, he was considered a good runner. He was skillful with the bow and arrow, and once recalled shooting a hummingbird with it. Indians were the only inhabitants of the Warroad area when Tom was a little boy. Tom Lightning recalls an incident when he was 5 years old. His uncle, Kokegisik, took him by the hand and brought him down to the Warroad River to see the first white man he had ever seen. This white man had come paddling a canoe from the south shore of Lake of the Woods up the Warroad River. He relates that looking at this big white man with a heavy full beard and mustache really frightened him. After that, he saw white men now and then as they were passing by. When he was about 14 years old, the white people started coming by oxen and wagon, bringing supplies to trade for fish. The Indians caught fish by bone hooks that they made, and they would fish through the ice in winter. Fish were very plentiful, so they needed only to go to the mouth of the river to catch all they wanted for their own use or to sell. The Indian men hunted and trapped in the winter, while the women and children fished with hook and line. The hunting grounds were south of Warroad around Bemis Hill. The men made their hunting trips on foot, using a toboggan to carry supplies and bedding. The supplies included wild rice, corn, dried potatoes, and meat. If in their journey they killed a moose, they would stop and make camp. One moose could be hauled on their toboggan. Some Indians pulled their load with the help of dog teams. Often it would be necessary to make several trips before they could get all the game home. The people back at home waited anxiously for their return. In the early days, there was also a good supply of furs. At first, there was no store or fur buyer at Warroad, so they would go to Kenora by birch bark canoe to sell the furs. The canoes could carry up to 500 pounds of supplies. Sometimes it took 3 or 4 days to make the journey to Kenora. They could bring back flour, sugar, tea, and pork, as well as clothing for men and children. Since clothing was not very plentiful, the women would get yard goods and sew their own clothes by hand. Before this time, the Indians had used skins and leather for clothing. Moccasins were made of moose or deer hide. Moose hide was warmer and stronger than deer or elk. For fancy dress-up clothes, elk hide was used because it was smooth and even. For winter clothing, wild rabbit fur parkas were used by the whole family. The hide was cut starting about 1 inch from the bottom and spiraling around and around into a rope-like strip, which was then hung up to dry. The strips were woven together to be made into clothing. It was not hard to get enough fur because the snowshoe rabbit was so plentiful. This was the warmest fur they had. If one had a rabbit fur robe, he could sleep outside in sub-zero weather without freezing to death. Honest John Lightning was married to Nay Maypuck's sister-in-law, and it was Nay Maypuck who donated part of the land on which the Warroad School now stands. Later, when Tom Lightning wanted to send his children to school in Warroad, he was told they were Canadians and they were charged tuition. The United States-Canadian border was meaningless to these Indians who had lived in this area all their lives. Sometimes the families were victims of circumstance when half the family was suddenly Canadian and the other half was American. The Chippewa hunted and fished where they always had and knew no boundaries. Tom Lightning tried to place his children, Hans 12 and Margaret 7, in a boarding school in Canada. Instead of being taught to read and write, they were put to doing chores and housekeeping tasks. After 2 years, they were still unable to read or write their names. They were told never to say anything to anyone and not to talk to a white person who came to the school. The children were then transferred to another school in Canada. This school was even more like a prison to them. Margaret recalls one incident where they were given permission to skate on the river near the school. First, the authorities marked off an area where they were allowed to skate. When all of the school children got on the ice, there was no room for skating. The girls were not permitted to talk to the boys, even their own brothers. One of the girls spoke to her younger brother and asked him to go and get skates for her. Shortly after this, they were all called off the ice. Skating was over for everyone because someone hadn't followed the rules. I'll continue with the Lightning family story next week. Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to tell our county stories.